Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
New is always better. It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. Got the same old buddies with me, Andy and Don. How you guys doing? Andy, what's up?
You're not going to replace us with some hot new things, are you?
A couple of AIs.
Jeez. This is what we had to look forward to.
It's going to be scintillating podcasting.
Yeah, doing well, man. Doing well. Excited to dig into some new sounds. It's funny how far back we have to go to truly get new sounds and music.
I know.
That is true.
How you doing over there, Danny?
Hey, guys. What's new?
Wow. That's you had a week to think about this. AI Donnie will do better. So this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums and the album format, and we find all kind of ridiculous ways to talk about them. We've got a great show for you today. We have each chosen an album that illustrates some new sounds in music. We're going to get into those in detail. Don's going to ask us a deep question. Then we'll have some shout outs to albums and album related items we're digging. And then we'll reveal what we'll be talking about next time. But this week, it's all about new sounds.
That's what I'm talking about!
Throughout music history, certain albums have emerged as groundbreaking works that introduced entirely new sounds and genres to the world. These revolutionary records not only captivated audiences of their time, but also paved the way for future artists, reshaping the musical landscape and leaving a lasting mark on popular culture. Today, each of us will present an album that introduced a new sound.
Yeah, everybody's talking about the new sound. Funny, but it's still rock and roll to me.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. So new sounds is like harder than I thought. What's new? Was it influential? Did it change music? I mean, is using a kazoo in one song enough?
Yeah.
Isn't it? I don't know. So through your travels, what other albums did you consider for this before making your final choice?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit subjective. I mean, oftentimes it was kind of like creating a new genre, whether or not that involved new instruments or new ways of using them.
And who possibly did it and when,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I might think George Clinton invented funk. Someone else might think it's James Brown. Like, where did it begin? It's hard to say.
So safer to go back further, generally. One record that I came across that I enjoy quite a bit, and it's a little bit of a debate in terms of how new sounds were involved, but that's the Mothers of Invention. Seems like they'd be inventing new things, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Their debut album in 1966 called Freak Out. This was basically when Frank Zappa joined the group. It's a very satirical rock record, elements of R&B, but also a pretty heavy dose of psychedelic experimentation, kind of making fun of that Los Angeles freak scene that was kind of just getting going. That's a really inventive record. Anything from Zappa and his compadres in this period were pretty creative. How about you, Don? What'd you find?
Well, I'm kind of obsessed with like the Sam Phillips Sun Records thing. I actually thought about Johnny Cash's first album, Johnny Cash with his hot and blue guitar. That early Johnny Cash sound with the Tennessee 2 is unique, you know, kind of has that boom chickaboom sound, which I think was sort of a result of them not being great musicians, you know. It was just this weird hybrid of like rockabilly and in traditional country. So, you know, but I think that ended up being a pretty influential sound moving forward. How about you, dude?
So I have the most modern album that we considered was Radiohead Kid A, or released October of 2000. Yeah, 2000 is new.
Only 25 years ago.
Yuck. That's disgusting to me. It makes me sick. But it was a departure from the earlier sound, incorporating electronic textures, sort of ditching the guitars, ambient soundscapes, experimental structures, and the themes were of alienation and technological anxiety. And Tom York, or as I like to call him, Mr. Head, he seems like kind of a brat where he's just like, everyone likes this, I hate it. And so then he has to
just go the opposite direction.
But it was interesting, but I wanted something that had a little more passion on the surface, at least. So I went a different direction. All right. Enough about all that. Let's get into our actual choices.
You choose me?
Oh. All right, for my new sound selection, we're talking about Babatunde Olatunje and his 1960 album, Drums of Passion. This record is known for introducing the Western world to the sounds of Africa, in particular, like this world music genre was born from this album, arguably. It was the Nigerian drummer's debut album. Let's jump in and play what was the biggest hit off of it. This is Jingo Laba.
That was almost my wedding song.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's too bad the audience can't see my hips.
Yeah, he's like Shakira.
So that single sold millions of copies. This album itself sold over 5 million copies.
Wow.
That song was later covered by Santana on their debut a couple of years afterwards, as well as a bunch of other artists throughout the rest of the century. The title translates to Do Not Worry.
That's where Bobby McFerrin got it
from.
Yeah.
Here's a little song I wrote.
No, you didn't. You stole it.
All right, my clickbait headline for Drums of Passion is Olatunje introduces the U.S. to the hot new sound that had only been around for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting snippet of history here. You have this Nigerian drummer who traveled to the U.S. to go to college in Georgia in the late 50s, kind of got involved in graduate school up in Massachusetts with some jazz musicians, and started a drum circle to generate money to pay for school, and got picked up by some notable jazz musicians. John Coltrane was a friend of his.
Cool.
Got also pretty involved with the social and political changes that were happening in the U.S. Got involved with Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, doing some of their social work in the early 60s there. So this record is very much about kind of bringing that African spirit, I guess, to the U.S. Babatunde is the only African on the album. Everybody else was kind of American who were recruited to play these various instruments.
Okay.
That kind of had like African history to them, but they themselves did not have any sort of African tradition.
My assumption, I think probably the assumption of people buying it, recording crew traveled to the, you know, traveled to Africa and had, you know, found traditional players of this music to, you know, perform. So it's interesting, and it makes more sense because of how clean and how in some ways song structure is here that is more reminiscent of American music, you know, in the arrangement anyway, or at least jazz maybe. So okay, well, that's good to know.
You know, honestly, I don't know where these songs originated from. I assume they have some ties to his native land of Nigeria, but I honestly do not know. They do have translations into English. Why don't we jump in and play another cut here? This was Chant of the Train Men.
All aboard.
All right, so Aki Wawa, or Chant of the Train Man, is the opening cut from the album. So it actually is a traditional Nigerian tune performed in Yoruba, I guess is the that language.
Mm-hmm.
So the lyrics refer to a request, I guess, of the train conductor, basically saying, you know, take me home. So I guess it literally translates to Aki Wawa, who's the conductor of the train, you know, please take me home to my father's house. So definitely sounds cooler in Yoruba, I think.
Yeah.
So the rhythmic patterns are supposed to mimic the movement of a train, which is
interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hear it.
It basically has like a call and response thing. So Olatunji's voice, you know, is responded to by a chorus of female voices.
Yeah. A big recurring theme on this record, I would say. Sometimes it's the vocal call and response, sometimes it's like a drum call and response back and forth. Yeah, big part of his sound.
Yep. So my clickbait headline for Drums of Passion is Olatunji travels to a different drum. I was reminded of that Stone Ponies, that different drum song. So, I mean, you know, it's clearly something different. I think by the time you know, the three of us grew up, you know, we had heard this kind of thing before, but, you know, in 1960, I don't think there was, you know, many people that, you know, had heard, you know, African drums before. So.
In the mid 80s, I thought Paul Simon had invented it.
So, you know, I was kind of curious about, you know, the various instruments. So, you know, I guess there's a bata drum, which is like a double-headed hourglass-shaped drum from Yoruba religious traditions that has kind of like the deep tone. Then there's something called talking drums, which I guess has some sort of tension cord around the body of the drum, and it can actually sort of simulate, you know, human voice. So you hear that a little bit. And there's also dun-dun drums.
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah. And so those are sort of versatile. You can adjust the pitch. There's the shikari, which I think is that – it's got like the beads woven around the stick, you know, that creates that rattling sound.
Shaking sound, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was an interesting album to listen to. My first couple of listens, you know, I was down in the basement painting. You know, I was playing it really loud, and it just created a lot of tension. I was getting frustrated, and it was dripping paint everywhere. So, you know, I didn't I kind of blamed the music, but then when I finally got it in the car and listened to it and turned the volume down a little bit, I started to appreciate it a little more, and the, you know, the intricacies of the rhythmic pattern. So I did kind of, you know, grow to appreciate it from an enjoyment standpoint rather than simply as like a anthropological study.
Yeah. Well, they need to put a warning on the album. Do not paint while listening. Frustrations will come.
I would have a hard time keeping that paint on the brush, man. Be shaking around so much.
Oh, yeah. I started pounding on the cans.
Maybe we need to have a episode sometime. Good painting music.
Oh, there you go.
I found this album great for the roller, but not so much for the brush.
All right, why don't we jump in here and play another cut from the record? This is towards the end of the album. It's called Shango.
So, Shango, chant to the god of thunder. It's a tribute to the Yoruban god of thunder and lightning.
It's not Thor.
I wish.
Isn't Thor, is he god or something?
Yeah, he's got thunder.
Different mythology.
Norse mythology. But yeah, so if I wonder if Shango can pick up that hammer. Anyway, so the song invokes the power and might of Shango through powerful drum patterns and chanting, and the thunderous drumming and the vocal outbursts kind of create that sense of urgency and intensity. But I love the influence on jazz musicians. That's kind of what new sounds do, is they infiltrate elsewhere. And I think that layered percussion and feeling like it's from the earth is part of the jazz movement changing and becoming a little more raw around the same time, I think is not a coincidence. I think that's pretty cool. My clickbait headline to describe Drums of Passion: the album that made everyone realize their inner drummer was seriously out of rhythm.
Yeah.
This is kind of like you're doing it wrong in some degree. I think this may have really opened up the possibilities for people sitting behind drum kits. Mm-hmm. Introducing African rhythms to Western audiences, world music in general, people's curiosities were piqued.
I love world music.
Yeah. Homer might. I've never really been a huge fan of it, but it can be jarring to the senses a little bit when it's not in the structures you're expecting or what you're used to. But I think that's what people were hungry for, was understanding the rest of the world. And then, as we have done in America, synthesizing things together and sharing.
Yeah, that's so much of what we do here, is kind of take those ideas and mesh them together with our own. Babatunde would go on to play with some jazz musicians like Cannonball Adderley, Quincy Jones, Max Roach, Stevie Wonder. Mickey Hart from the Grateful Dead was very involved in this Planet Drum project, which Babatunde was involved with heavily in the later decades. So yeah, I think the influence is undeniable for sure. I think as well, also mentioned, like, his cultural impact was pretty significant in the 60s as well, in terms of the civil rights movement. Yeah, so if you're new to world music, or kind of want to get a sense of like where that came from, at least from the Western world's perspective, definitely check out Babatunde Olatunje. and Drums of Passion.
Before we continue our journey through new sounds, let's hear from friend of the show, Pick a Disc.
Do you like music? Do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick a Disc, where every fortnight a guest comes on to talk about an album for whatever reason they want to. Sometimes I like it, sometimes perhaps even something else other than just like it. You just listen to the podcast and find out. We talk about the album, we talk about the songs, we talk about the artists, we talk about tangent things that are slightly related, and sometimes we deviate off tangents. But don't worry, we'll always bring it back in the end. But you can find us on all your social medias and all the podcast apps for searching for Pick a Disc. You can also find us on the part of the Weedig Podcast Network under Linktree/Weedig Podcasts. And until then, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
My pick for an exciting and new sound comes from Kraftwerk, or Kraftwerk, from 1974, their album Autobahn. It's the fourth studio album by the German electronic band formed in Dusseldorf in 1970. They came out of this krautrock scene of the early 70s, which was kind of avant-garde experimental stuff, but they ended up embracing a completely electronic direction on this album. The core lineup for this album was founding members Ralf Huder, I think, and Florian Schneider. So they were joined by Wolfgang Fleur on electronic percussion and Klaus Roeder, who contributed a little bit of violin and guitar.
Herr Don, it sounds to me like you picked this album just so you could say cool German names.
Yeah, but I'm not really good at German pronunciations. But. All right, well, let's hear the title cut, which makes up all of Side A in the spirit of Iron Butterfly. Here's Autobahn.
You know, I always heard you could go whatever speed you want on the Autobahn. Yeah. Sounds like they're not taking advantage of that here.
Lazy Sunday drive. So Autobahn is supposed to be a sonic depiction of a journey along Germany's highway system, or you could call it an audio road trip from Dusseldorf to Hamburg. So the concept originated when Ralf Huder hung up. I don't know if it's Huter. Is that how you would say it in German? Huter, the U with the two dots? Huter. So the concept originated when Ralf Huder hung a tape recorder outside the window of his Volkswagen Beetle to capture the sound of traffic.
Oh, Volkswagen.
Yes. Farfignugen. one more note on the song. So I thought they were saying fun, fun, fun on the Autobahn, but actually it's German. So it's we're fahren, fahren, fahren auf der Autobahn. Which, now that I know that, I can hear it. I can kind of hear the German. But people mistakenly thought it was a play on the Beach Boys' Fun, Fun, Fun.
Which, mistakenly, people think that's Fun, Fun, Fun. It's Farn, 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 till a daddy takes a T-Bird away.
Which makes sense, because it's We Drive, Drive, Drive on the Autobahn. So, Farn works for the Beach Boys song, too.
They did it first. I still am just shocked that this is 1974, because I think I thought that robot voices and things like that came along during the hip hop breakdancing era of the mid 80s, where you'd hear a robot voice in something here or there. And I thought it was invented then, or that Gary Newman invented it, you know?
Yeah.
I think there were some synth sounds back in the 60s I was aware of that were not very musical, though. I think this is really the first musical use of it.
It was experimental stuff, you know?
Just like bing, bing, bong, bop, bop.
One way this was innovative was that they actually synthesized like real world sounds, you know, like car horns and stuff like that, Doppler effects, passing vehicles. That was all generated with synthesizers. And if you've ever played with like an old fashioned synthesizer before there were like presets and stuff like that, I mean, it would take forever to create anything that sounded like anything you would want to hear. I mean, they're patching things, wires together and stuff like that.
And you're putting it to tape.
Yeah.
you know?
That's right. It's not like you're sequencing this all together.
Yeah. Right.
That's actually the first Kraftwerk song to have lyrics, and they did choose to do it in German, which was, you know, somewhat interesting because, you know, even in Germany, much of the music was in English. All right. Well, my clickbait headline for Autobahn is "Zer Guar to..." Wait.
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry.
Good God. Why do you do this to yourself and us?
Zur geierte Kraftwerk, danku für Gary Newman um de undupisch mode. I don't know. That was so terrible. Basically, I'm saying, dear Kraftwerk, thank you for Gary Newman, OMD, and Depeche Mode. I guess I could have just done that instead of trying to be a smarty pants.
Wow, that's fun watching you struggle.
But as Dude said, you know, I mean, this sounds like Gary Newman. Like all the, like the sonic palette that those groups were playing with, they were already established on this album in 1973, and those things all came 6 and 7 years later. You know, there were some Depeche Mode instrumentals in 1982 that sound exactly like some of the cuts on side B. So it's
true.
Easier to do though.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's amazing just how ahead of its time it was. Well, let's hear a little bit more on side B. We've got Kometen Melody 2.
It would be Zwei for 2. Ein, Zwei, Drei,
Vier, Fünf. Oh, it's Zwei. Okay. Kometen Melody Zwei.
That just sounds like the dragon flying music from Neverending Story or something, you know? That was good, yeah. So apparently this track is one of the early uses of electronic percussion pads played by Wolfgang Fluhr, showcasing Kraftwerk's innovative approach to that electronic and truly instrumentation. Very repetitive. So the piece draws inspiration from Comet Kahutik, which was first observed in March 1973.
That's an actual comet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's a comet melody, right?
That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like it. Yeah.
So this one is a little more melodic and rhythmically driven, which I think is really where the development and influence of the electronic and ambient music genres came from. My clickbait headline to describe Autobahn, an electronic joyride that made us all question our attention spans. So here's the deal. This did set a foundation for music to come, but it was a long time before electronic music became mainstream. And I think part of the reason was technology. When the technology caught up to the ambitions, then you had mid to late 90s, early 2000s, where it really started to develop and come alive and have its own subgenres and all of that. It was bold, I guess, to skip traditional structures, verse, chorus, but after a 22-minute opener, the rest sort of felt like a lot of work. And the B-side may have worked better for me, like if they had flipped it, Iron Butterfly style. Start us off with a couple of electronic songs about comets or whatever, and then throw us on the Autobahn. Because I found Autobahn to be the most engaging of the tracks and to have it over with and then sit through the rest and be like, that was kind of the struggle for me. But I appreciate the experience. I've never listened to a whole Kraftwerk album before.
You do that well.
Thank you.
drive on the New York State Thruway. Let's hear another one. This is the final cut on the album, Morgan Spazergung.
So that is kind of how the album comes to a close there. The title is translated as Morning Walk, apparently inspired by the group's quiet early morning walks after a night of recording in the studio.
You know, I heard another connection was, so this was recorded during the gas crisis, and I guess there was so little activity on the Autobahn that people actually started walking on it. I don't know if that's true.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that would be maybe another connection to the Autobahn.
That sounds so incredibly dangerous from what I know about the Autobahn. All right, my clickbait headline for Kraftwerk Autobahn is Kraftwerk explores new sonic territory in this shiny, finely tuned synth machine. A couple of things about this surprised me. I think the biggest thing that surprised me was just how sort of lush and warm the synth sound is here. It really does feel like it has an analog quality to it, which I appreciated. Not nearly as cold as some of the synth sounds we would get, like thinking of like Devo and stuff like later in the 80s.
Yeah.
Still has lots of like nerdy effects and stuff like that that come in and out, like the panning of the sounds from the left to the right ears. Nowadays, it just sounds kind of like, okay, cool. But I'm sure in the time, maybe this was kind of, you know, cutting edge technology and stuff that they were doing. Yeah, I would agree with what Dude said. I think Audubon is the high point. Maybe the album just feels a little uneven because you kind of get over that hill and then it's kind of just coasting the rest of the way. Yeah, I mean, I kind of welcomed the woodwinds there on the last track. That was kind of a nice little addition to melody to kind of bring things back together.
They were like, we have to make one more track. I'm so tired of looping stuff. Just play a flute.
Got this flute here. We can do that. So, it's interesting to think of this as kind of like bleeding edge technology at the time and how much work they had to do to make this sound. But nowadays it does feel a little bit, I'll say like amateurish, but just like in comparison to where we are with our synthesizers and modern technology in music, it just does sound like a little old fashioned, I guess.
Hmm. Well, guitars sound like guitars. Drums sound like drums. This was evolving at this time, you know? So, and there's still more room for change in electronic music.
All right. Well, Kraftwerk's Autobahn marks a pivotal moment in music history where electronic music began its journey from experimental curiosity to a central force in popular culture. Check it out.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
And it's time again for Deep Questions by Don. This episode is all about new stuff. When have you tried something new and then it became a big part of your life?
Don, I hate to poke at the deepness of these questions sometimes, but I think really anything that you try becomes part of your life. You have to do it at least once, right? So
maybe Andy should try something new and be supportive.
That would be new for me. All right. Well, the first thing I thought of was tea, which is something I got into maybe like a decade or so ago. Had a tea business for a few years and got really deep into that world of like high-end tea of grown around the world. And still something I spend too much money on and too much time thinking about and to really enjoy.
While you're listening to world music.
It does go well together for sure. Yeah. How about you, dude?
So a few things. Podcasting.
Oh, yeah.
Was, you know, something that was new to all of us at one point and grew into it, and it's become an important part of my life. But you know, yoga is another thing that I tried here and there over the years, but then as I got older and felt sore all the time, then I started doing yoga regularly, and it's just become a part of my day. I do it in the morning, and I look forward to it, which is really weird to look forward to stretching. It's cool.
Yeah. Must be good for you or something.
That's what they say. We'll see if I live to 120, if it worked.
But doesn't failure.
How about you, Don?
A similar effect to yoga, I found some interesting uses for chocolate syrup. I think I saw it on, might have been on Sesame Street or something, the egg cream. You guys know the New York egg cream drink, which is basically just soda water, milk, and chocolate syrup, but you have to use like the You Bet chocolate syrup for it to be like authentic, like out of Brooklyn. It's got to be this particular brand of chocolate syrup.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not good for you, but you know, when I'm indulging, I like to have an egg cream. And then have you ever had a bottle of like Hershey's chocolate syrup and like you can't get any more out of it?
Yeah.
And so I think my mother actually showed me, you know, just pour milk into the chocolate syrup bottle and then shake it up.
So you drink it like right out of the bottle then, just squirt it into your mouth then? Or?
Oh, yeah.
That was the whole draw of it when I was a kid. If we got to the bottom of the bottle, that who got to have the last squirt with the milk in it. But
all right. Well, what new things have become part of your life? Let us know on Instagram and Facebook or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
So I picked one of the most obvious artists I could think of that revolutionized or brought new sounds, and that's Jimi Hendrix, born Johnny Allen Hendrix in November of 1942 in Seattle, Washington. He started playing guitar at 15, joined the Army in 1961, and traveled the world, played in backing bands with Little Richard, Isley Brothers. I also heard at some point that he played with James Brown. He was then discovered by Chaz Chandler, the bassist for The Animals, and was brought to London in late 66, where he formed the Jimi Hendrix Experience and created this album, Are You Experienced? Why don't we jump in with the opening track of the U.S. version of the album, Purple Haze. So Purple Haze was released as the second single from the album, showcasing Hendrix's innovative guitar techniques that blend blues, Eastern modalities, and features his distinctive chords and playing that have often been attempted to be reproduced by other guitars. The lyrics are often interpreted as referencing psychedelic experience. Hendrix described it at one point as a love song, but he also said that it was based on a dream in which he found himself walking underwater in a haze of purple.
Interesting.
The heavy use of distortion and effects like Univibe and Fuzz Pedal make the track stand out. It's the blues-based anchor of this that I think is what I like the most, even with all those psychedelic, crazy sounds and, you know, backtracking and the use of the tritone interval or the devil's interval, giving it that unsettling, ominous tone. Still, that blues bass, the way that the songs are structured, the way that the vocals are delivered, it gives you something to hold on to when you're kind of spinning out in this psychedelic world of these crazy guitar sounds and solos. My clickbait headline to describe the album, Are You Experienced? When one guitarist changed music more than a whole British invasion. That's saying a lot. The Beatles and Herman's Hermits and Dave Clark Five, Rolling Stones, all those British bands made a huge impact. But this, I think, shook the world and even shook those bands up into having to adjust their sounds and start to pull some of these techniques into their recording. All right, so why don't we move on to the next track? Listen to a little bit of Love or Confusion.
Yeah, one of my favorite cuts off the album there, since it's about that moment where you're unsure if it's just like puppy love or something more, maybe. Perhaps more interesting the lyrics, though, are Jimmy's guitar effects there, just kind of like swirling throughout the track there with some pretty amazing distortion. And yeah, I think that track really nicely encompasses some of the sonic experimentation that they're doing on this record, and I think they would continue to do later in his career. My clickbait headline for Jimi Hendrix's debut is, with a single query, Hendrix redefined the rock genre. Without question, we all have been experienced.
Very true.
Very influential record. I mean, it's hard to imagine where we'd be in rock music today without Jimi Hendrix. And, you know, this record was still one that started it all. It's just a raw, kind of like furious sound, I would say, that kind of jumps off the album here. And it feels very much like a showcase for Jimmy's guitar playing, which I'm sure was the intention, and I think they deliver that. Redding and Mitchell, I think, are adequate in terms of keeping up the pace and kind of keeping things grounded.
I think that's what they were there for.
Yeah.
To start off, I think that's why they were chosen.
Yeah, and it feels like they're secondary for sure, but I think they do a nice job of kind of keeping things moving without getting too off the rails. But struck me listening to it nowadays, or coming back to it, the recording on here is just so terrible in my opinion. There's so much background noise, and the flubs and the feedback. I mean, the feedback, you can kind of, it's part of the music, but the way it's recorded here, at times it's really loud, or times it's like kind of an incidental feedback. It's feels very messy.
I love it. I love how dirty it is, and I think that's part of what made it rock and roll, as opposed to, you know, like psychedelic rock was kind of different than what this is truly. This is like unhinged musicianship, and that's the energy I love so much, is just that it feels like music just moving through his fingers, and there's no filter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't call it punk rock because it's like virtuosity, but
right. There
is a punk rock like aggression to it, you know, and a rawness, I think, that he captures. And I don't think you would have punk rock without Jimi Hendrix.
No, I totally agree. I just like, why can't you filter out some of the hiss and the people walking by and stuff, you know, that kind of be nice.
You like the clean production. I like it a little dirty. Okay. Production, that is. All right, so moving on. Why don't we check out the title track, Are You Experienced? Also the final track.
Boston. Well, I am.
Boy, you know, I think every night before bed, Lenny Kravitz should thank God for Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, right.
So Our Experience was written by Jimi Hendrix, and it was recorded on the final day of sessions. So it's largely just based on one chord, and it has this like drone-like quality that is reminiscent of, I guess, Indian classical music. Supposedly, there's no bass, or there's no bass guitar line on the on the song, which I hadn't noticed, but I guess that also was sort of a Indian influenced approach. But it's innovative because it has guitar and drum parts that are played backwards.
They're recorded and played loops backward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how some of this sounded live. Probably closer to blues tradition with wild guitar solos and less of the psychedelic vibe, I imagine. Yeah. Because a lot of that was created with studio, you know, tricks and double tracking and things of that nature.
Yeah, these days, I think there's pedals that can sort of simulate right. that backwards sound.
Yes.
But I don't think they existed at the time.
You know, a lot of the guitar stuff that sounded like scratch DJing and stuff. Like, I think Tom Morello with Rage Against the Machine brought a lot of that back. That's where the ideas must have come from, right? Because it was being done then, but that was before anyone really liked the sound of a record scratching.
Right. Before it was cool.
That's true.
Yeah.
And the lyrics for Are You Experienced are just about altered states of consciousness and self-discovery. Another reference to looking at the world or viewing life from the bottom of the sea. Interesting.
Recurring theme for him.
Yeah.
And we don't know where in the world, I mean, I'm sure we could figure it out, he traveled while in the military, but who knows what he picked up where in terms of sonic ideas from different types of music and musicians.
True. I thought he might like drugs.
That too. All right. Well, my clickbait headline for Are You Experienced is Move Over, Clapton, and Let Jimmy Take Over. Instead of Move Over, Rover.
Yes.
Interesting story behind that. Like that was literally about him, wherever he was staying or something, there was kind of a dog between him and the fire, and he wanted to stay.
Yeah, for the song Fire, yeah.
Yeah.
And that line popped in his head, supposedly.
Let Jimmy take over by the fire.
So, you know, I mean, during the days of Cream, you know, I think Clapton was kind of anointed the guitar god, but I supposedly Hendrix sat in with Cream in some live performance, and, you know, it was like at that moment that people are you know, sort of crowned Jimmy, the guitar god. I suppose it's debatable, you know, which is the, you know, better guitarist or whatever. I mean, I tend to think that Hendrix might be a little more innovative sonically, but I mean, I don't want to disparage Clapton.
No.
Because he's innovative in his own way.
Yeah, in a technical sense, and in the cleanliness of the way that he plays. This is just sort of unleashed. It's stream of consciousness, I think, like coming through his hands. And then probably, you know, being a left-handed person, flipping a right-handed guitar and restringing it the other way, the dynamics, the sounds were probably different than what anyone else was using, because the guitar's not designed that way for the strings to be stretched in that order. So I imagine it had an impact on his signature sound.
Interesting. I mean, it's a great album. I mean, all the songs are good, but it doesn't really feel like a cohesive album to me.
Not as much as what they would do later, I think.
Yeah. Well, just there's songs that I think need to be mentioned. Manic Depression with its unique 3/4 time signature and its dizzying sound, I think is awesome. The Wind Cries Mary is, I think, one of the most beautiful and accessible songs after a fight with his girlfriend, Kathy. But it's like the regret of the things said. But the wind cries Mary, the wind whispers Mary, the wind screams Mary. Like, it's just so passionate through very simple wordplay. Yeah. So besides guitar awesomeness, also he could hit really nice notes with lyrics as well. And of course, Foxy Lady, which, you know, Wayne's World. can't help but think about Garth dancing to Foxy Lady.
She makes me feel kind of funny.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as new sounds, Jimi Hendrix brought a new take on the blues beyond just the blues-influenced rock that was already happening, and pretty much throw out the rule book on what you do with your guitar. You want to slam it against the amp and make it squeal? Do it. Make it part of the song. Your mistakes can become your inspirations, and I think it's just great. So yeah. Go check out the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Are you experienced?
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Well, we kind of look to the past to identify new sounds, but anything new recently that you're digging?
Yeah, I got something new. My brand new bag.
Jeez. Andy's got a brand new bag.
Actually, I got a pretty interesting record here that does tie back into the world music scene. The artist is Ebo Taller. The record is called Ebo Taller JID022, which stands for Jazz is Dead, number 22 in the series. Ebo Taller is a Ghanaian guitarist, composer, and bandleader. He's been putting out records since the mid-70s. Let's hear a little bit of Ebo Duo.
I'm Andy, I'm cultured. Jeez, you always make us look like clods over here.
So this Jazz is Dead series is pretty interesting. It's produced by Adrian Young and Ali Shaheed Mohammed from Tribe Called Quest. They've been doing it for a few years now. It's a bunch of different kind of jazz and jazz adjacent musicians kind of working with the two of them. To put together, it's kind of a modern sounding record. And I think this one works out really well. So Ebo Taller, JID022. And last one for me is from Dream Theater, another progressive metal group that's been around forever. They put out their 16th studio album earlier this year called Parasomnia, which I think means something about like distress while you're asleep. All the songs seem to have to do about like sleepwalking or, you know, lucid dreaming, that kind of stuff. It's a very dark, heavy, it's a really metal sounding Dream Theater record, which I was kind of surprised.
I haven't listened to it yet. I'll check it out.
Yeah. Let's play Night Terror.
Dang it, the voice. I'm not so sure. We'll see.
That's a small part of the music. It really is.
I know. Would they get the guy from Blink 182 on there?
What you been digging on, Don?
Well, I've been trying to sort of keep up with the pop scene lately. So you guys know Chapel Roan? I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, she hasn't announced a new album yet, but she did release a single that is kind of country-ish. It's called The Giver.
So she's going to reverse swift this thing?
To reverse swift. Ooh, be careful. Yeah. Stretch first.
It kind of reminds me of some of that 90s Shania Twain. Yeah. And then Matt Berninger from The National is coming out with a second solo album called Get Sunk. It comes out May 30th. Here's a track called Bonnet of Pins.
Maybe he like used ChatGPT and was like, what can I say instead of Crown of Thorns? Nice.
I haven't listened to his other solo record, but this kind of sounds like The National to me, which I dig. So, yeah. How about you, dude?
So I bumbled on a band called Black Foxes and their 2025 album, The Horror.
Oh my God, The Horror.
The Horror.
It's spelled.
That's H-A-A-R. they're an indie rock band formed in 2013. They're English. This is their fourth studio album. I had not heard of them before. And it's moody and simmering and art rocky and distant and dark, but also smooth and comforting. Let's listen to a little bit of Ricard's Egg.
Dramatic.
It is. It's not really heavy on lyrics. There's a lot of instrumental stuff and instrumental breaks, but I've listened to it a couple of times now. It's, if we were picking fall albums, this would be, I think this is appropriate for October.
Nice.
Vinyl-wise, a couple weeks ago when I picked up that Diana Ross record, I also stumbled upon John Fogerty's Center Field from 1985. So John Fogerty, of course, the former lead singer and guitarist for Creedence Clearwater Revival, and this was his third solo album after a nine-year hiatus at the time. Heartland rock, swamp rock, very, you know, mid-80s. Let's listen to a little bit of The Old Man Is Down the Road.
Yeah. Oh, that's the one that he got sued for because it sounded too much like Run Through the Jungle, which he no longer owned the rights to.
But he wrote.
But he wrote.
Right?
Yes.
That's sounds too much like that thing you read before.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sounds too much like you. Yeah, also, notably, the song Center Field has become an anthem among baseball fans and was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, apparently. Be.
The song? Wow.
It's right next to Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Yeah.
So what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
All right, it's about that time of the show, and I'm reminded of the great American philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson.
I thought you were going to say Ralph Macchio, but go ahead. Yeah,
both great in their own right. Ralph said, unless you try to do something beyond what you've already mastered, you will never grow.
Mm.
Exemplified by our three artists today. All right. With the beginning of April on the horizon, we've decided to give Wadbot the day off, and we are going to be doing something a little special on next week's episode, so be sure to tune in then.
Gotcha! It's April Fool's.
What are some other albums with new sounds that you like? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, and Blue Sky at Album Nerds. Visit albumnerds.com to suggest topics for the show. Peruse the Hall of Fame and listen to all 283 episodes. The best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you once again for joining us on the Album Nerds podcast. We'll catch you next time with something a little special. Fool.
Thanks. Listen, everybody. See you next week.
Don, don, don. Otto, don. Don, don, don. Otto, don. Otto, don.
I'm not sure what that is. I think we're done here.
It's in the ballpark. It's close enough for me.